Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen.
And Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
He is a Browns Hall of Famer. He is the man behind Hall of Fame beef. As a matter of fact, I have not gotten the apple cheddar Hall of Fame beef snack sticks out of my cabeza since. I'm on the website. I'm going to order some before the end of this segment, but not before we hear the expert analysis of Joe Thomas, who joins us now on the Fan Hotline. Joe, welcome to the show.
Hey, Nick. Thanks for having me on, buddy.
Well, it's great to have you here. And one more time, the apple cheddar beef snack sticks, they've stayed with me since training camp.
Well, you know, like Coca-Cola early versions, they had an illicit drug in there that hooked people. I'm not going to say anything, but there's definitely some addictive properties of our apple cheddar beef sticks from Hall of Fame Beef. So it's not just you, buddy. It's me, it's my children, it's everybody. So hopefully we can keep the same recipe, unlike Coke, for the long time, because that stuff really is like crack cocaine, baby.
Well, I'll tell you this. I don't care what's in it as long as it makes me feel the way it makes me feel, which is very alive. Joe,
yes.
Joe, I got to ask you, buddy. I'm not sure if you watched Thursday Night Football, but how did it feel to watch Joe Flacco do what he did last night for the Bengals?
I don't know. I may have a different take than a lot of people, but you know, I built a little bit of a relationship with Joe over this season, and then when he was here a couple years ago, and then obviously just playing against him for a long time. So he's a good person. He's a fun guy to cheer for. He gave me some joy a couple years ago in that playoff run. And the fact that he was beating the Steelers made me kind of happy about it. I know that there was probably a lot of Browns fans going, man, where was this when he was on our team? But we don't have the weapons right now on offense. We don't have the offense for him to be able to use his talents, which is stand in the pocket and fling the football to a spot. And so when you got a guy like Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, like, he's still a pretty good quarterback because there's nothing wrong with that dude's arm.
So, okay, so there's no part of you that looks at what he was able to do and then say, where was this just a few weeks prior? Why wasn't Stefanski able to get this? Even though, listen, Joe, I'm right there with you. You don't have the offensive line. You don't have the receivers. It's not the same. But they at least let him throw the ball deep.
Well, that's a good point. he's got some different weapons, though, and I think – you know, maybe in hindsight, there should be some critical analysis of maybe looking at what we were doing when he was our quarterback earlier in the season and saying, hey, why weren't we pushing the football down the field? Was it play calls? Was it guys not getting open down the field? Was it because he didn't have time because his tackles were giving up pressure on the edge? I don't know. There's probably a lot of different things you can look at that. And maybe you can say, hey, maybe Kevin Stefanski wasn't dialing up those shots. But I don't know. I look back a couple years ago and Stefanski had no problem dialing up shots down the field for Flacco when he had some different players on the offense. So it's hard for me to point the blame exactly at the offense and what was being called, and probably a little bit more of looking at, hey, maybe the weapons that we had, the guys just weren't getting open for him, or they weren't catching the ball. And so he just didn't feel comfortable because he didn't have the time to get the ball down the field. But it's a different story when you got Jamar Chase and T. Higgins.
Joe, I think a fair amount of people expected the Browns to have a struggle those first 6 weeks. I've maintained it's the self-inflicted stuff that bugs me more than the record. What's your read in the first 6 weeks of this team and the likelihood that they can turn 1-5 into something more palatable over the next couple weeks?
Well, the frustration for me, like you, is penalties, drops, missed assignments, right? Because those are things that we can control, and those are things that take no talent. We knew that we weren't going to be the most talented team in the league going into the season. So if there's one thing you want to focus on is, hey, let's not beat ourselves. Let's make sure that the emphasis is on limiting penalties, limiting mental errors, and let's catch the football. Those are very fundamental things in football, and we know that if we do those things, we might have a chance. If we don't do those things, we got no chance. And so pivoting towards the rest of the season, and this is something we talked about on CBD earlier in the week, it's like, all right, what are you going to make of this season? We know it's already feeling like it's a lost season. So what are we going to do with it? Well, let's focus on something that's concrete that we know we can accomplish. And what is that? Let's be tough. Let's be disciplined. And let's be a physical football team that nobody wants to see. They know that they might be a better team than us overall, but you know what? It's going to be painful when they play us. And so how hard you play, that's something you can control. If you're on sides, if you know what the snap count is, those are things that we can control. And then, hey, let's focus enough where we can catch this football. Let's watch it all the way into our hands, catch the ball with the hands, bring it into our body. Our quarterbacks deserve it. Our fans deserve to see something exciting out there. So I think when you focus on those things and say, hey, that's what we're talking about every single day. That's how we're starting every meeting. That's what we're holding guys accountable, number one, first and foremost. I think that's how you potentially can still get something out of the season and feel good about maybe how you finish the season. But if they don't change that, it's going to only get worse from here.
How are we going to be able to judge Dylan Gabriel and eventually Shedeur Sanders if we don't have the offensive line and you don't have the receivers? How do you look at them on a even like a big picture and a game-by-game basis for being able to tell how they're doing?
Well, I think that's the trick, and that's a big reason why the Browns, Coach Stefanski, have decided to try to hold off as long as they could with Dylan Gabriel and then, of course, with Shedeur Sanders, because you want to try to judge him and give him the best, most fair opportunity. Obviously, that doesn't always exist in the NFL. However, you wanted to wait at least until they knew enough of the offense where you felt like when you're watching film, hey, are they getting rid of the football when they're supposed to? Are they throwing it to the right guy? Are they making a read based on, you know, is it a post safety? Is it a split safety? Do they know where their eyes are supposed to be? And then how are they doing when the play breaks down, when they escape the pocket? Are they making good decisions? And those are things that are always not apparent right away for the average football fan, because you actually got to go back and watch the all 22. And even beyond that, you really need to be in those meetings to know what that quarterback is being coached to do in those situations. And it's really tough. So as a fan, it's hard to know how do we evaluate these guys. But I think one thing as a fan, just watching the game on TV, what you want to see is you want to just try to see a little bit of steady progress. You want to see some of that leadership on the field, which is so important from that quarterback position. You want to see that quarterback on game day starting to be comfortable and feeling like he's the field general. When somebody guys screws up, he's getting in their face. He's talking to them, right? That's when you start noticing, hey, this guy's got confidence. He's got something that might lead him into being a franchise quarterback. I think it's those things. When the situation gets tough, does he go into a ball and curl up and get scared and fall down? Or does he rise to the occasion? Does he call out his teammates? Is he holding guys accountable? Is he standing in the pocket? Is he delivering the football on time?
Joe Thomas, Hall of Famer, the man behind Hall of Fame Beef as well, on the fan hotline with us, breaking down the 1-5 Cleveland Browns. Well, I do want to get to this Miami game, but you know the Browns are 4-19 in their last 23. And I've been a little maybe too obsessive about the idea of losing the locker room or how much losing is too much losing. So, you know, I will ask you, like, how much losing is too much losing before the locker room stops believing they can win this year? And maybe how much losing is too much losing before, you know, it's going to be tough for Kevin to keep these guys where they need to be?
Well, that's a tough question. I don't think it really has a concrete answer. It's very difficult to say, but I think what you can look at is how hard are the guys playing? You know, how are they fighting in the fourth quarter of a game that maybe is already out of hand? And I think that's really what they need to look at and what we need to look at as fans. Because I think if you start seeing some of those things, then you got a deeper problem. Because when you lose the locker room, like you mentioned, it's hard to ever get that back. You know, it's like the toothpaste or telling your kids about Santa Claus. Hopefully there's no children listening. But once it's out, it's hard to get back. It's hard to regain that trust. And that trust, I think, is the most important thing for a football player, right? You need to be able to trust the guy that's coaching you, that's designing the game plan, that he's going to put you in the best position to succeed. And when you do that, a true professional, no matter what the record is, no matter what the score is, he's going to give everything he has because it's his job, right? It's his livelihood. It's the name on the back of his jersey, the pride that he's playing with. And I think you can still get a lot out of guys, even in a season that's not going the way you want. But on the other hand, if you're not getting that, if you're seeing guys that are starting to make more mental mistakes, they're having more penalties, more drops, those things that they can control, that shows a lack of focus. If you're seeing guys that are not playing hard through the fourth quarter, right, then those are the warning signs, I think, that really tell you a lot about what that trust is and how that relationship is and what the locker room feels about not only just their situation, but what they're being given from a game plan standpoint and from a coaching standpoint.
You are instantly able to just hit the ground running with your NFL career, and you can tell me if that's just a wrong assessment, but as a top five pick, and Mason Graham's a top five pick himself, it seems as if the PFF grades aren't too kind to him right now at the moment. What would you say goes into that right there? Maybe a less than dominant start to the beginning of what is supposed to be a very promising career for Mason Graham.
Well, you got to remember, too, that he played 3-4, so he was more of a reader in college. He wasn't as much of a penetrator. And then Jim Schwartz's system, he's playing a 4-3. He wants those guys to be disruptive, to get upfield instead of taking on double teams, absorbing them. He wants them to create chaos and havoc. And so I think there is more of a learning curve there than maybe like when I was a rookie coming in, you know, playing left tackle. It's kind of the same. I mean, maybe you have some different zone blocking concepts where you maybe getting asked a little different technique in your pass pro. But for the most part, it's pretty similar. So I would expect that he's going to continue to grow and develop. I think he's got a great group. Obviously, we feel like our defensive line is probably the strength of our team. And so you would expect that as he's starting to become more comfortable, you're going to see him start to make more plays as the season goes on. And I guess I haven't seen his PFF grade, and I'm not sure exactly what it goes into it for a defensive lineman. But you definitely want to see that progress to feel like this was a great draft choice and that he's going to be somebody who's going to be one of our cornerstones of this team moving forward. But you're going to need to start seeing that pretty soon, I would say.
Joe, I know you live up in Wisconsin. I'm sure you have some little bit of following the Packers up there. I've watched that organization. I mean, the Rashid Walker kid is their left tackle. That's a former seventh rounder. Sean Ryan was a late third rounder. I'm trying to think. Tom, the kid is their right tackle. I know
Zach Tom.
Yeah, Zach Tom. Mm-hmm. Like I watched them just continuously find offensive linemen, and then I watched the Browns that. It feels like the O-line factory that we had when maybe you were playing is kind of kicked out. What's the special sauce in finding offensive linemen and making sure you constantly have a chance up front on the offensive line?
So I kind of see offensive line drafts a little bit like Mike Holmgren used to draft quarterbacks, where every draft he was drafting somebody, right? Because I think it's really tough to judge the transition from how you play in college because there's so many different offenses, so many teams playing spread that it's good to take just a lot of your draft choices, especially in those mid to late rounds, and use them on offensive linemen because you never know when that guy from Southwest Missouri State, you know, who was All-American in the SWAC or whatever they play in, turns out to be a great player, but you got to get him into camp. You got to have a chance to work with him. You got to give him a couple years to develop because it's a position that you're doing something that's extremely unnatural, right? Every other position in football, they run forward, which is something you've been doing since you were 2 years old. You're tackling guys. That's what you did with your brothers and sisters when you were 3 years old. You're catching the football. You're throwing it. It's something you've done your whole life in offensive line play. You're going backwards with your feet spread out. You're doing something completely unnatural. You're pushing people. You're lifting with your hips when you're in the run game, you're walking like a duck, you're blocking people like a gorilla. So it's those techniques that just take a lot of repetition to get good at. And so I think if you want to be able to build a strong and dominant offensive line, you just got to take a lot of shots. You got to take a lot of whacks at it. And I think that's something the Browns haven't really done a whole lot of. They have had a pretty good offensive line. I know they're in a bit of a transition period right now, because they have had a solid offensive line or even a pretty good offensive line for a while, but now those guys are getting old. And I think their thought process was, hey, let's hang on to these guys as long as we can and try to fill in the holes we have elsewhere in the roster, especially going back, hey, you spent a lot of money on Deshaun Watson, right? You thought that he was the linchpin to your championship. He was the key and that, hey, we need to get positions around him to build this great team elsewhere. Obviously that didn't work out. And now you're in a transition period where it's like, okay, well, because of that, we also didn't spend a lot of draft choices on offensive line. We didn't put a lot into that. We were trying to hang on to some older guys. And now...
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen.
And Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
You know, it's one of those things where you're kind of meeting your maker a little bit, where you got a lot of problems that you have to deal with all at the same time.
Joe, I saw you yesterday. You were at, were you in Chicago? I thought it looked like you were at Barstool Chicago. Is that right?
Yeah. I drove down to Chicago yesterday.
Okay. And did you see the video? So they have a guy that works there named Michael Katic, who was a center for Indiana last year, and now he's doing the Barstool thing. And the whole video is him just meeting you and shaking your hand and him just whiffing on the moment to like ask all the questions he's always wanted to ask you. And then the video cuts away and it's him just being like, I blew it. I had my chance with Joe, my hero. I've loved him more than any football player ever, and I blew it, and it went mega viral. Do you see those videos after the fact, or is that the type of thing that in the moment you're just like, oh, yeah, he definitely blew it as you're walking away, but you just got to keep walking?
Yeah, it was pretty funny. It was a great day yesterday. I went down there to do a cooking show. I brought some Hall of Fame beef down there for their great chef, Donnie, and we did a cool cooking show. We made hamburgers, and we made some beef carpaccio. We made some amazing flat iron steaks that were incredible. And then, oh, shoot, they're filming the Yak over there. And so we went over there, and I did the gauntlet. And, you know, it's kind of fun just hanging out. I've known Big Cat forever. We both went to Wisconsin. We were the same class. But actually, with Katic, I didn't know any of that was going on because I was just there to do a cooking show. I was looking for Donnie. You know, there's a zillion people running around. And then after the fact, after I left, I had a bunch of buddies start sending me that as I was driving home, you know, stuck in traffic in Chicago. And it was really funny because I didn't even realize that that first moment existed. And then when I was leaving and we were talking, all of a sudden I saw somebody was filming it because Katic started asking me some very detailed and fun offensive line stuff about, like, hey, how do you get out of your stance when their feet are so narrow, and do you push off your toe? And we had the same one of the same coaches overlapped when he was at Indiana, Bob Bosted. He was our tight ends coach when I was in college. And so it was kind of cool. We got into the weeds on the offensive line play a little bit, and you could tell he was pretty fired up. And I didn't realize that that was the redemption moment, but I'm happy he got it because, you know, there's not that many people in the world that get nerdy on offensive line play like me. And so it was cool to have that little connection. And it was a really fun moment down there, being down at Barstool and then meeting a fan, even though he was wearing a Steelers hat, which that's probably why I blew him off the first time.
Joe, you're always so great with your time. Love what you're doing with Hall of Fame beef again. If you guys haven't got your order in yet, sixspringsfarm.com. You can find Hall of Fame beef there. I did two of the apple cheddar and a picanha because I need some picanha in my life, basically, Joe.
Oh, dude, I did a picanha last Friday. It was unbelievable. If you have a smoker, smoke it for like an hour and then finish in the sous vide, or you can finish on the grill as well. Just add that little like smoke flavor to it. It was unbelievable. And slice it thin. You're blessed, man. You just hit the jackpot. I can't wait to hear all about it, Nick.
I kind of feel like Kotick with the offensive line talk, but with food. Joe, great stuff, buddy. Appreciate you.
Yep, thanks for having me on, guys. Thanks,
Joe Thomas there, Hall of Fame beef at sixspringsfarm.com. Browns Hall of Famer on the Fan Hotline. We'll react to what he had to say about the state of the Browns in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan. I will tell you.
You're not like Ken and the Wagyu. How does he say it? Wake. He says it's so wrong, it bothers me so much.
And here's the thing.
My dad was a meat man for 41 years. It's Wagyu beef. No, it isn't. No, it isn't, Ken.
Here's the thing about that.
No, it isn't.
We should get a Nobel Peace Prize for not bringing that up with Joe, because I didn't want to bus toss Ken to Joe. I couldn't do it, but But I thought about it like five times, and I'm sure you did too.
I don't get enraged often listening to the show. I just kind of take the show in, and I just got so enraged. This is a funny little quirk with me. He was so adamant how it was, and they all just kind of let him have it.
Yeah.
But then Owen was saying it right as the other part of this.
And I think it was Owen trying to be very subtle about it.
Is that what it was? Happens too sometimes, right? You're just subtly, you'll say it right a couple times to hope that they kind of pick up on it, and then when they don't pick up on it. But it was the insistence on it. My dad was a meat man for 41 years. I know Wagyu. It's like, no, you don't. Not when you say it that way.
Can Joe be the GM, by the way?
It's very pedantic of me, but...
Can Joe be the GM, by the way? Because he's...
Well, I forgot to tell him that you wanted to hire him for Wisconsin's head football coaching job after Fickell gets fired this weekend.
I thought about that, too. I didn't want to do that to Luke. I didn't want to put Joe in that position either.
It would have been a bad position.
I hate that Luke is clearly going to get fired there.
He probably likes Fickell. He probably has had a lot of good interactions with Fickell.
And I didn't want that to go to like the Wisconsin message boards. And I chickened out. I'll be very honest about it. But Joe, his take on the offensive line and kind of the difference between Green Bay. And like I know Green Bay's offensive line struggling this year because they've had a lot of injuries. I think they got like four or five guys on the IR right now. But what they do that's so great, like they had an established center from 2012 to 2014, and they took two centers. One was J.C. Tretter, one was Myers, and Tretter ended up being the backup long term. Myers ended up being the starter, and then they were allowed. Like they just continue to do that at every position, though. Like Rashid Walker's a seventh rounder from 3 years ago.
I know the hard part about that though is that it does come at a compromise, right? And so up until a couple years ago, and really now with the Golden draft, they're starting to turn the page on this. They weren't taking wide receivers when Aaron Rodgers was there. They stopped taking wide receivers in the first round, and they stopped really giving them those weapons. Like, it's a balancing act, is the point, right? And when it comes to the Browns, and that's what they partly did in taking Mason Graham at number five overall and taking an inside defensive line guys. Like you have to balance out what you think is important and what you think isn't. And they have not put the necessary efforts towards not only the offensive line when it comes to the draft, but also really in turn wide receivers.
What's crazy about it though is I know they haven't had many firsts or seconds with this regime. They've had a lot of other picks. And that's like, I can understand if like your defensive line, it's getting harder and harder to find an elite edge rusher later in the draft because they're always overdrafted. Same thing with wide receivers, in fact. I definitely understand that. You look at offensive linemen, you can find really great. All you have to do is just wait a couple years. And so that's where like the Browns have done a good job of, we're going to look at Alex Wright in the, I think it was late third round. We're going to get Isaiah McGuire in the fourth round. Mm-hmm. We get all these guys, and that's worked on the defensive side of the ball to one level or another when they're not taking Siaki Ika with their highest draft pick who didn't fit the system.
I mean, did Jed Will scare them, though? I don't know. You tell me.
Well, but that's the 10th pick. Like
that is what we're talking about in many ways. Like, I mean, in, like last year, again, I'm going more towards what Jason had to say, less of what Joe had to say, but the idea that when you chose defensive line, when you have holes, wide receiver and offensive line, like that was I don't know why they chose that route. I tend to think they just thought best player available, and that's what they were going for, and they thought Mason Graham was the best player at five, but they went defense in when they had a lot of holes that they needed help in with offense.
216-474-0092. What Joe said, where he talked about Ron Wolf and the philosophy with quarterbacks transferring to the offensive line, I think is spot on. I think the Packers have two guys of like 12 offensive linemen on their roster that are top 64 picks. One is Jordan Morgan, I think their first rounder from either this year or last year out of Arizona. And then Jenkins, who was a second rounder, and he's an old tooth. He's long in the tooth.
They took Anthony Belton in the second round last year.
So they've got three guys. Everybody else is fourth round, seventh round, fifth round, or a reclamation project like Banks from San Francisco. Like, at some point, when it comes to wide receivers, A.J. Brown's going to be available for a trade, right? Waddle from Miami. It's going to be those guys. I think you can always try and find a trade for, or those guys are the guys you're going to find in the first round or second round. But just every year drafting a lineman or two, I think has to be the focus. And I'll be honest with you, I think it's a little bit on the analytics side of the ball that I think like I'm more old school football guy with Joe of draft in the trenches and then find everything else elsewhere. Well, okay, and the quarterback.
Well, early. I mean, I tend to think, and that, so what you're describing in many ways is what the Saints are trying to pull off, and I don't think it's a bad thing, by the way. The idea, and Spencer Rattler's playing right now. Why is Tyler Shuck not playing? The philosophy and what they're really going for in New Orleans is they want to make sure everything else is taken care of, and then they can plug and put the quarterback in. And then they're trying in many ways to build out not only the offensive line, but every piece of that offense. And then they're saying, okay, we'll let the quarterback be the final piece to that puzzle, essentially. They've been very vocal about that. It's interesting. It's a little bit different. We should start paying a little bit more attention to what they're doing.
If you guys are on the chat, if you guys are following us on the 92.3 The Fan YouTube channel, get a load of Harry, who's saying, big guy talking about food, stop being a stereotype. I think it would be a little weird if I didn't talk about food. Right?
You like talking about food.
Yeah.
Are you supposed to just never talk about food?
Or can only skinny people talk about food because it doesn't reinforce a stereotype? By the way, it's a stereotype for a reason.
I know,
am fat because I like food.
I know, but you are the author of You Don't Trust Skinny Chefs.
It's true.
Which I've disagreed with.
I
want to work some space in for the skinny chef.
I don't know that that's the exact way that I viewed that, but yes. If you were a chunkier chef, I believe you've tried your own food before, and you've tried it quite a bit.
You liked Emeril better because he was a little bit bigger.
Because he was first.
And let's say
Bobby Flay didn't
Bobby
have fam.
Bobby Flay's the guy I always point to. And Bobby Flay looks like he's always...
Also a bit of a ginger, for being fair.
Why does he give off such a jerk vibe? I don't understand why. I don't get it.
Could not be Bobby Flay. Chef,
but
Michael
that's
Simon.
The type of thing, though. Everyone's always like, oh, you have to be relatable. And it's like, no, I think Bobby Flay would be a jerk to hang out with, but I like his stuff. I like his content a lot.
I've never eaten his food, so I couldn't tell you.
Well, no, I've never had his food. So I guess his food could stink, but he presents it in a very nice way.
Mm-hmm.
And then I love how they always tell stories with everything. They attach it to everything. Bobby Flay's story is pretty incredible.
Yeah,
high school dropout.
I'm going to start talking about kale, how much I love salads, just so I don't fulfill the stereotype. You know, guys, I was on my Peloton the other day. Tell you about my cardio.
So where do I fit in, though? Because I'm not really skinny, but I'm also not really fat, and I don't really know.
You are allowed to talk about food.
Do I have zero expertise in anything, then? I can't talk about the fitness because I'm not fit enough for that convo, but I'm also not fat enough for food convos?
Yeah, but you're more fit than I am, so you can talk more about fitness than I can.
Okay. Maybe this is why I talk golf, I guess.
Okay, on Twitter saying, Nick Wilson entered the High School Lunch Hall of Fame by eighth grade. Darn tootin'. Darn tootin', I did. By the way,
High School Lunch Hall of Fame.
Where do you think they went when they needed somebody to shake something free from the vending machines? This guy.
Did your high school lunch have basically an unlimited supply of Bosco sticks as well?
No, but we did.
Magno, you know what I'm talking about, the Bosco sticks?
I had those in grade school.
Yeah, I used to love those. You dip them in the marinara sauce and everything. It was like my whole lunch was Bosco sticks. That's not a lunch.
No, but I will find, kids will tell me, my kids will be like, oh, we ran out of chicken fingers this week and we don't get another shipment till next week. I'm like, could not have been the case in 1995.
There's like this fat, sixth grader on TikTok that just, he reviews the food that mm-hmm. the school gives him.
Yeah.
Hysterical.
I don't know we would go fat on that. I just made me husky. Husky plus size.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen
and Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
Oh, my bad. Did I insult the community?
No, just the youth, right?
I think his handle said something about being fat, and that's maybe where I gravitated towards.
He can say it. I don't think
is that
you
one of those?
Can say
well, I apologize
it.
To the sixth grader doing TikTok
18,
reviews.
Once you get to 18, we get label them what you want. Whatever. I can't.
What is the fat appropriate?
No hog in that fight.
What is the fat appropriate label?
Big boned. or Husky.
All right, so there's this big bone sixth grader, and he's on TikTok, and he reviews the school food, and it's the funniest thing. He's like, they gave this to me 2 weeks ago. Two thumbs down.
He sounds like hoot. A hoot and a half.
Love it.
216-474-0092.
Hate it. Love it.
Cash, love it.
Hate it.
Why did the Browns' offensive line suck? I think it's because of very similar to what Joe said. You didn't invest enough in the draft, and you didn't develop enough guys, and also the Andy Dickerson thing was just a complete nightmare, and one idea could dash all the goodwill for the Guardians. That's in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan. I would like this report, though, to F off. I know we are in the midst of the ALCS and the NLCS. Be nice if our friends in Milwaukee could wake up a little bit, maybe make this a series. We at least have one in the ALCS. But the John Heyman report the other day that Stephen Vogt is drawing interest from other MLB teams and saying, you know, this kind of move very rarely ever happens, but it's worth noting. Keep your grubby mitts off my manager.
Well, and at this point, it does fall on the Guardians to make sure. It almost feels like a very college football move. In many ways, it's like he's just going to use this to then get himself a bigger raise. That's cool. That's fine. But like, if the Padres, for instance, who have been starved to find that spot at the managerial position of which for something to work, they can offer you three times as much money. Like you're entering the last year of your deal. I don't know. It's time for the Guardians to pony up and pay him a big amount of money to stay.
You going
to
go Malkovich?
No.
You don't want him to pay that man his money?
Not good at impressions, that the Malkovich one is the one that I always die to do.
Mm-hmm.
I always get very excited to do the Malkovich one, but I'm not good at impressions.
People are saying it's your best one.
If anything, well, I'm saying that for sure. At least the first one always goes hot off the bat. You know that about me.
Yeah.
And on top of this, if anything, what you see now, this is where this is a, you did a short-term play for no long-term gain.
Mm.
You see, if we had just had the Malkovich impression, then maybe, I don't know, 2 months from now, we'd have another impression. And then maybe, if, you know, 6 months from now, another impression, and we could build on those impressions. But we went Malkovich into another impression that I dare not even go down, into another impression that I dare not even go down, and in a two-day span, we've wiped away me doing impressions.
Sounds like you just don't want to go down, and that's okay. Now,
yeah, can't do it, won't do it. But they need to pay Vogt is the point here.
Yeah,
they need to pay Vogt.
I understand. I really do understand. Like, it doesn't make sense for this organization to do 13-year deals, right? And it doesn't make them – they don't feel like they can afford another $25 million player. Okay, whatever. If you lose your manager because of money – like, I was thinking about this today. Like, well, would you trade Stephen Vogt for Adolis Garcia? I'm just trying to think of like somebody who's on their way out of their old team.
Like managerial trades are so few and far between. I remember Ozzie Guillen getting traded to the Marlins, and it ended up being just basically two players nobody had ever heard of. But like Vogt would command something of substance.
Yeah. But again, like, do you want a comp pick? That doesn't do a damn thing for
me. No, comp picks don't do anything for you. And the moment that the manager is going to the team and saying, I'd like this trade because I want to make three times as much money, mm-hmm. you might as well then just let him out of his contract and let him go just make the money elsewhere because he's 1 foot out the door. Now, there has to be at this point, I would imagine, and maybe I'll sound foolish for saying it and putting it this way, the idea that Vogt would owe the Guardians some sense of, you gave me my chance. And even though it felt like other teams would, you still gave me an opportunity. There's so few of these jobs. I owe how the baseball world views me right now to you guys anyway. And so just having us for 2 years, the job's not anywhere close to done.
Yeah, I would be shocked if he wanted to leave at this point. Unless there's something we're not privy to. And again, baseball, keeping the clubhouse mentality.
It'd be money. But money is the argument here.
Well, but even that, like,
I mean, think about, like,
you paid Tito. You paid Tito top dollar for a hot minute. I know you wanted to not pay the next manager that kind of money. Well, the next manager turned out to be just as good as Tito.
I mean, there is a reason why Vogt was the guy selected out of 45 different guys, and part of that was having to do with the money and the financials. Now, I don't remember off the top of my head, and I don't even know if that is open out there, how much he is making per year. Sometimes it's a little fishy. But I remember like when Mike Matheny first got hired with the Cardinals way back in the day. I mean, because he ended up filing for bankruptcy at one point because he had a bunch of business deals that just went south. And there was a stretch.
Did he have Shohei's interpreter as his money guy?
It's basically kind of what he went with. No, he had somebody. He bought all sorts of different land and different properties that just went completely belly up. And you found out at the time, for the first like half decade of him being in St. Louis, he made about $900,000 a year. Like some of these managers can make legitimate pennies on the dollar before they actually prove themselves. And for a team like the Padres that is just flush with cash and has been for a while now, if they say we'll pay you $10 million for someone like Stephen Vogt, that's got to be appetizing. Because I tell you right now, this first contract that he signed, I would be shocked if the Guardians are paying him anything north of $2 million a
year. I think I read this. When I first saw it, my initial thought was, oh, his agent's out here trying to get him that extension. I think that's really interesting because that's not typically how the Guardians have done things.
Mm-hmm.
But that was my first thought because I would be blown away if they weren't satisfied with the job Stephen's done the last 2 years. I'd be blown away if they would even consider it if somebody called them with any sort of offer. So that was my first thought. My second one was, don't you dare do it.
I mean, how pissed would the fan base be? The handoff from Tito to Stephen Vogt was not supposed to go this seamless.
Yes.
And you made a comment earlier in the segment, something about the idea that you've replaced Tito with a manager that is as the same quality or something along those lines of Tito, which is insane to even think about. But that's how we kind of sit there with Vogt. Like, this is not supposed to go. It's not supposed to go the way that it's gone. And partially because it's gone this well is why he would have such a high demand, though.
Well, and here's the thing. I'm talking about Tito at the end. Tito early, I think, proved he could win a lot of different ways. At the end, it really felt like Tito had to win his way, right? I think that's a lot of a sign of an older manager who had done it, and I think that makes a lot of sense with the success he had. Vogt's won two different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean just like the fast start versus the slow start. I mean, you know, 2 years ago, you were buoyed by an elite bullpen, not nearly enough starting pitching, and an okay-ish lineup. Last year, you had the worst lineup in baseball, and then between the bullpen and the rotation, on any given week, it was your guess as good as mine what was going to actually save you, and that's the hardest job to do. To win the way that Stephen did in 2025 is the hardest way to win when you don't have anything elite to fall back on consistently.
Mm-hmm.
The adaptability, the light, the speed of foot that it takes to do that, he's proven to me he's there. And here's the thing. I feel this way about the front office, certainly. As long as you've got these guys, I think you're going to have a chance to be competitive year in, year out, even mm-hmm. if you have the occasional dud of a year. I've started to feel that way about Stephen Vogt, and that's a wild thing to say 2 years in to
two
this
years
run.
In. But this is the type of respect that he's gotten around baseball. So John Heyman kind of loosely connects Stephen to the Padres, and then it just digging a little bit deeper on this, JT Snow, 4 days ago, was out there saying that he's got a hint that the next manager of the Giants is Stephen Vogt.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is somebody that would be kind of plugged in and kind of in the know. We all remember JT Snow playing. Like, that's a real baseball name, saying that he's already committed to the idea that I can read it for you and how he actually phrased it. I have connections to the organization, never been invited back, but I think Stephen Vogt will be the next manager.
So,
like, that's wild that this type of stuff is happening.
So what would your response be if the Guardians came out and said, Steven's been such an integral part of what we do, we felt like we owed it to him to let him pursue this?
I'd say BS as well. I'd say, obviously, you didn't want him here, and I would put it on everyone in that organization to pony up whatever money it's going to take. Either Stephen has a lot of baseball people doing this to, again, just pump up his value and get his new contract out there and get him all sorts of money, or maybe, just maybe, you can read what we saw in the halfway through the season, that USA Today poll, when it's like, who would you rather play for the most? And half of the league said they wanted to play for Stephen Vogt. Like, clearly, he struck a chord as being one of the best managers in baseball at such a short time frame already into this whole thing. Like, he's getting a lot of credit here, Nick.
216-474-0092. John Heyman saying Stephen Vogt is drawing interest from other MLB teams. He did note, these kind of deals are hard to pull off, but it's something to watch. What would your reaction be? Is there any sort of response from the Guardians that would make it okay if Stephen Vogt was allowed to leave and be somebody else's manager? The lead in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen
and Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.